Okay, great. Someone just joined?
Okay. Eric Hummel from Oxnard.
Eric, okay. And we may have some more people joining in, and we just, it's okay, we just interrupt the conversation and let you introduce yourself. Where are you from, Eric?
Oxnard City Core.
Okay, good. This week it's great. Let me do the news from Washington first. Joe said he really wanted to listen to this conversation, but they still keep delaying the RFP for those of you who are going to be responding. There will be an RFP. Someone just joined?
Hi, everybody. This is Glow. I'm sorry I'm late. I'm sorry.
We're doing news from Washington, Glow, and I did put the recorder on. So.
Okay, great.
And I told them about your Disney trip and that you might be off.
Yeah, I wish I was there. It's raining here now, and it's so cold.
Bummer. Okay. Well, we've done the weather. So how about news from Washington? Have you heard anything from Joe regarding RFP for the grantees?
For the grantees, I have not.
Nothing.
The only thing that he's talked about is the RFP for the grant that we use for technical assistance. And he hasn't given me any updates on the grantee RFP, so I'm assuming that everything is on schedule, which, you know, the schedule was behind.
Right. It was supposed to be November. We talked about maybe December, January.
Yeah.
Someone just joined?
Bruce Diamond.
Bruce, okay. And someone else just joined? Anyone join? Okay. Introduce himself. Okay. So it isn't, if you're thinking of writing a grant, I wouldn't worry about it. The fact that it's late or has not been issued, we're going to send out notices as soon as we hear, or even if we hear in anticipation of it coming out, and it'll be on grants.gov. But for those of you either re-upping or thinking of developing a grant, it will go out. It's just a question of delay, and it delayed last year. It's funny, as much as they say, well, we're going to be different next year, I think last year came out in, January, February. So this isn't anything unusual. But it's good time to develop your partnerships, and if you had a grant or applied before, it's a really good time to talk to the regional rep, because as soon as the RFP comes out, they can't really talk to you about your specific grant. So if you had a grant and you were either rejected, or if you want to talk to your regional contact, and I'll put them in the post-session notes again as a reminder, you need to call them up, and they'll be happy to talk to you and even talk to you about your specific grant. And certainly if you were not successful in the last grant round, you want to get your reader's notes, and they have to supply those with you. And it'll give you your score for each of the different areas. And it's a very helpful tool, because if you're running pretty good in most areas and you've got, a 90 or an 80 in community involvement, it knows where you really have to beef your grant up. So I really suggest anyone who has submitted a grant to look at those, get those reader notes, and find out your score, how they scored you, because they'll give you very specific numbers for each of the sections. And it's very telling, because it may say you just have to work on your partnership, so you have to work on your community resources, which are the biggies. Do that, and we'll put reminders out when the grant is issued. This is the 10th of the 10th. We do these PLC calls in cycles of 10, and this is 10 of 10. We're going to take a Thanksgiving break, and then on the 11th, we're going to do a kind of a recap where we'll try to kind of come up with the best and innovative ideas of all of the great grantees that we had make presentations during the cycle. And so we're going to have a call on the 11th, and I'll send out notices. And that'll be some of the really interesting ideas that came out during these last 9 calls. We'll probably have another PLC cycle starting the first of the year. So, and that'll be probably focused more on, we'd like to talk to grantees about what they're doing. We'll also focus on the very specifics of each aspect of the grant application, which is also all of the things you need to do to have a good grant program. So we'll focus in on community involvement and try to figure out the best of the best, what people have done in community involvement, what people have done in recruiting, how people have done their placement and that type of thing. So that'll be coming up in the next cycle, beginning of the year. But we will have our one final PLC of this year on the December 11th, and I'll send out reminders to everyone. Well, having said all that and got that behind us, this is great. One of our most unusual grantees, Zender Environmental, and they have a program called that Race JT. And I was suggesting that everyone go to their website, and I'll put this in the post-session notes, because I'm sure everything they talk about today will be in more elaborate detail in the website. But I really want to compliment April and Lynn on your website in terms of a communication mechanism. Zender got a grant in, 2011, and then for good reason was re-upped in 2013. They have a very unusual target audience. It's basically Alaska. And we're talking about 70,000 people, but we're talking about rates of poverty of 22%, 30% Native American, 19-20% unemployed employment. They do have a lot of contaminated sites, though. So the question is how do you access such a broad area? One, how do you work in a rural area? Two, how do you survive and flourish in tribal regions, which are very difficult? Tribal job training programs are very difficult, and I extend my hand to the hard work it takes to do tribal work, because there are a lot of issues that all of the issues you have in urban and rural areas, you have in tribal areas, but you also have additional issues. And so they're working in that area too. So with that, I'm going to turn this over to Lynn and April, and maybe you could tell us a little too about your how you got started and what you're doing. It's a fascinating program. Lynn?
Yeah, great. Thanks, Mike. And my name's Lynn Zender. I'm the program director, and April Reed, program manager, and I'm going to kind of be sharing the presentation. I'm going to follow along an outline of some of the topics that Mike and Glow had sent us. It's the Rural Alaska Community Environmental Job Training Program. Its acronym is actually RACEJET, like picture a plane taking off for the career and for your career in the future. Our Alaska Native villages, there's about 180 isolated rural villages. They are off the state road system. The only commercial way to get there is first you take a jet to a rural hub, then a small plane, which requires Arctic gear in the wintertime. Very small plane. And the folks in the villages are able to travel by like small boat on a river. Most of them are on a river system or snow machine in the winter. But the villages aren't connected to any other village. And there really aren't any roads outside the village at all. They range in population from about 25 to 1,100 people, mostly around the 300 to 600 range. There's a heavy reliance on hunting and fishing for food still. They've got very different traditional and customary life ways from most of us. They are very economically depressed, as Mike said, and sanitation there is often compared to third world conditions with very high unplumbed home rates. So there's a number of job training programs in the state, but ours is the only one where we try to train folks to actually stay in their communities. So they're, and the point of that was really trying to stop that brain drain, stop the migration from rural Alaska, and allow folks to continue their traditional life ways and keeping their close community support network. When we started the program, we gave a lot of thought to what jobs could possibly be available in our communities, because there isn't really any industry for most of them. with just a couple of small grocery stores, so that Tithe and if there's a city government are the main employers. We came up with solid waste-related work mostly, because everyone has their own dump site. Waste are really difficult problems to manage. There's a whole, I could go on and on for days about solid waste in Alaska villages, but the sites are unlined, and expansion is very costly. Anything, any kind of construction is really costly in the villages, and shipping out waste is logistically impossible. So solid waste management is something very important to villages. So we spin around that and contaminated site job skills. And so we offer rural solid waste management, landfill operation, beyond recovery, confined space, forklift, BPR first aid, contaminated site and left awareness, home fuel tank assessment, which is kind of our homespun course, spill response, haz whopper, and we also leverage job skills. It all adds up to about 4 weeks of courses, which we offer each spring to about 18 to 20 students. Find them in for 2 weeks on and 2 weeks off, and we pay for their travel. And then Mike wanted to know how we decided to develop a workforce development program. And that's not very interesting. We train about 40 to 50 villages a year through some USDA-funded grants, and we train them in solid waste, and we've helped a lot of tribes and consortia with tribal response programs, which are the brownfield, essentially state brownfield programs, but they're tribes. So when the grant came out, we thought, we can do this. But, of course, we had no idea what we were really getting into. Most of you have programs are aware. What we found is our typical audience of employed tribal environmental professionals for 3 days at a time. It's really different from running a job training program for low-income unemployed folks for 4 weeks. Where we're responsible for their travel 24/7. And then April's going to talk about the recruitment and strategy, screening strategies. And I should say we're going to try and go through our program pretty quickly so we leave enough time for questions at the end.
Okay, thank you. this is April. Hello, everyone. How do we reach this very dispersed and very rural population? We found that the best way so far that we've come across is really radio. Folks rely heavily on radio. Email listservs also, and we get the word out to tribal environmental coordinators who are, you know, also EPA grant-funded programs. We go through the general assistance program folks, and we get in touch with the workforce development regional offices, regional environmental programs, and our website, as Michael said, is a really great place for folks to check us out and learn more about the program. We also have newsletters, and we go through Alaska Municipal League, listserv. A lot of our folks are not English speakers as a first language, and so to help us with that, we translate our PSA into Yupik as well, so that we can reach out to folks who can't necessarily understand English. And then, you know, once we get folks interested, we have an application packet that they have to fill out. It consists of the application. They have to have two personal references, and then we conduct a phone interview. And our interviews have to be on the phone because we cannot afford to fly folks in for interviews. And lots of rural communities still don't have the internet capability for Skype, so we rely heavily on telephone conversations. We also have a couple of sessions where we offer folks a conference call to find out more about the program. And this is before the application process ends. And then for retention, once we get folks on board, we actually have to, before that, we have an advisory board that we also go to, and they help us score the applications so that everyone kind of is seen on their own merit. And then once folks are accepted into the program, as Glenn said, we fly them in for 2 weeks and then fly them home again for 2 weeks and then fly them back again for the last 2 weeks. The first program we learned, or the first year, we learned quite a lot, and so evaluation of that helped us in our retention efforts. And what we've done to kind of help us with retention. So let me step back a moment. Our first year, we were able to offer 20 spots. We had 18 spots filled, and then by the end, we had 16 graduates, and that was 2012. 2013, we also had 20 that we could accept. 19 accepted the program, and 16 graduated. Now, having said that, there were a couple of folks in both years that were able to get hired through the, you know, some of the trainings that they did receive. Let's see here. So some of the retention efforts that we wanted to work on, what we initiated in the second year, we there's an organization called First Alaskans, and we partnered with them for the first day to conduct a kind of get the program, offer the program a cultural context so that folks could bring their culture into the program as well. We kind of set up leadership roles and just kind of set up the program through the first day. We also, in the evenings, we have them, you know, overnight and over the weekend, we offered Alaska Native mentors to come and speak with the groups. We had Charlie Esk in one night for a Raven presentation, talk about the Raven program, things of that nature. We also have a large population who may or may not need assistance or support while they're here as far as providing sobriety activities. So we offer free transportation to churches and to meetings if they are requested. We also offer phone cards so that folks can stay in contact with their family. Being away from home in a large city is very different from what most people are used to. And so connecting with home is a very, very important retention strategy that we try to come at from lots of different angles. Part of our job readiness that we help folks with, aside from the basic trainings, we also work with the job centers and offer workshops in resume writing, mock interviews, and job searching skills. We also offer them, there's a system, an online system that helps folks keep their resume, their certifications, help look for jobs, and find job information. This is called the Alaska Communication Information System. So we set them up with an account there. We also have a job fair that we're able to get them to during the training. Let's see here. And then, so for our placement strategies, let me just tell you, our first year, we were able to place 100% of our trainees. In 2013, we were able to place about 83% of our folks, but those couple of folks that have, and our training ended in the spring, so April. And in Alaska, you know, lots of jobs are based on weather, whether they, you know, folks can get in and out, and things are pretty frozen here in the wintertime, so lots of jobs, there's less availability for jobs in the wintertime. Let's see here. So as far as placement strategies, our program is a little different from others because we try to place folks within their local communities so that they can work, so that they can remain at home or else in a community that might be close by. Some of what we've been able to do is offer folks job sharing. For example, our 2013 graduates, we had four different communities that had two of our graduates, and we were able to get our two graduates to help with freon removal in four different regions. So that's kind of some of the work that we help to organize for folks. Let's see here. We also have a kind of an help folks learn how they can create their own jobs and programs through waste collection, or through, I'm sorry, through collection programs. So we let them know how to, we teach them how to gauge, you know, how much each household would have to pay for a collection program for someone to be hired to collect, you know, the waste that might be needed to be collected. And so, let me see here, what else? Lynn, am I catching everything?
It's interesting.
Yeah.
This is something I'd never heard of, which is really fascinating, creating your own job. And it makes a lot of sense to rural and tribal that if you could do an analysis of the population and the waste generated, and you can then almost be an entrepreneurial and create your own job and say this could support a salary of one person, and therefore you're creating your own job, and you've got the skills and certifications to do that. That's a wonderful idea.
Right, and we also do something similar with teaching folks how to audit for a light retrofits, and our home fuel tank assessment is also kind of geared towards that, just encouraging folks if they're not able to convince their tribe or city council to start a collection program to go ahead and try to try it on their own. I did want to mention actually just our audience kind of our class profile really ends up being about 95% Alaska Native, 90% male, although this year it looks like our applicant pool will, you know, we've got 30% female, so that you may likely end up with a higher female rate, and our ages range from about 18 to 55 or so.
Are the Alaskan, when you say Alaska Native, how does that break down on tribal?
Alaska Native, if you're an Alaska Native, you're going to be a tribal member. There's 229 Alaska tribes. Like I say, about 180 Alaska Native villages that are rural and isolated. And we break down that as essentially if you're 30% or more Alaska Native is our audience for the communities. But typically our communities are more like 90% Alaska Native or higher. They're essentially a tribe, so the communities slash villages are all have at least one tribe located in them, and a few have two or three. I just wanted to mention just real briefly and then maybe open up for questions some of the difficulties with the program. For us, it's really just being responsible for folks 24/7 because we do pay for the hotel bill. I personally sign off each year, you know, saying that I'm going to be responsible for any damages. That's rather stressful. As April mentioned, we do have substance abuse or past across substances, particularly alcohol abuse issues. So we have had some relapse each year. It is difficult to keep folks away from. It's difficult to keep folks in our program when they, especially when there's subsistence going on during the program. It's very, very difficult just because the community and families depend so heavily on the hunting and fishing. And then funding is a huge thing because at least a third of our budget is eaten up just by participant travel costs. You also asked about positives or negatives about the EPA Environmental Workforce Development Program. And to me, the positive thing is getting funds for the program. And the negative thing is the funding is not enough for a program like ours. Tips when applying for a grant. Anyone's welcome to contact us. I'm not sure who's listening that may be applying for a grant this year, but I mean, the biggest tip I can say is just do your groundwork for and if there is something unique about your program, be very specific to justify why your program budget is so odd. And, you know, for us, of course, it was, you know, really high participant travel costs. But I want to mention in closing that we've got a lot of leveraging going on with the program because we have so little funding in terms of just the travel. We've got a great partnership with the state of Alaska. They do provide some instructors for our awareness courses. They provide the Western Spill Response Team, provides our oil spill response course. The Job Center provides some job skills. We get a somewhat small grant, but we get a grant from the State Department of Labor. Last year, we were able to leverage a grant called from USDA called the Rural Community Development Initiative Grant. That helped us quite a bit. You need to partner with different communities for us, we were trying to develop a job for those communities and trying to work with the management of the community, the tribal governments, to see about trying to help them create a job for our participants. We get some scholarships from the regional Native corporations. And then our current efforts, actually, we're working with the University of Alaska Fairbanks on what they call an occupational endorsement, which is a mini, mini degree, basically. We've talked to them for the last couple of years, and they want to develop this 10-credit program based on our program, so that when our participants go through RaceJet, at the end they'll receive an occupational endorsement through the UAF system, essentially a college degree that will hopefully help boost their chances of getting a job, as well as boost our chances of getting more funding from different sources. So we're really excited about that, and UAF will be providing tuition, actually, for all of our participants this spring. And then we're also trying to access some different ways to get WEFNs. The state of Alaska has some different requirements to access those. So I think that because our program is becoming more established, that I think we'll be successful this year. But we're really getting a lot more leveraging as the years go by, which is really nice to see. And that's our program.
That's awesome.
I don't know if you have time for questions.
Any question of Lynn or April? Have any? The whole idea of working with tribes is a challenge, and we've got someone that's working on a tribe here. And normally the big issues are, one, you want to keep them on the tribe. You don't want to train someone and just have them leave. The saving grace is we find that many Native American people like living on the tribe, and they like to travel, so they don't mind leaving and then coming back. And I assume that's your strategy too, is you can train them, and they can either make a local job for themselves, or they can join a firm, and then they would be on travel, but they could still live at home. Is that what your goal is?
That's not really possible where we are. It's sort of a last resort, because the travel costs from a local community to a hub or to a main city like Anchorage are very high. So it involves essentially, if they're going to be commuting, they would need to pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars to kind of return home. And what generally happens, and that's the same if they get a job, say, on the slope or a mining development, a large mine, the chances for them to return home regularly are just not really there, and it's really disruptive of their role as providers for their families, hunting, fishing. It generally just is not something that works out well. So that's why we try as much as possible to work within the local community. And often our placements aren't going to be full-time permanent positions, but they might be some part-time jobs, which is fine by our participants if it allows them to stay.
And if you could create a local job, whether it's solid waste or wastewater, that would be ideal. That would be ideal. You haven't looked at
wastewater,
have you? Is wastewater
an
issue?
Each community has their own treatment plant, regardless of whether they have plumbed homes. But the state operates a really comprehensive training program for the wastewater operators. So we didn't really get into training for wastewater operation. It's just one to two jobs that are pretty much taken care of in terms of the training.
Any additional questions? I'll put in the post-session notes these, and I really do suggest you go to their website, because it's a great, not only is your website, I really compliment you, and you put a lot of effort into that. Not only does it tell all about your program, but there's incredible resources on all kinds of things, like solid waste or on wastewater, and it's very, very well done. I compliment you. Probably the best. It's simple, but it's got a lot to it. And I compliment you on the effort you put into that. It works well.
Yeah, thanks so much. Yeah, we actually got funding from USDA to develop fact sheets that are primarily specific to Alaska Native Village environmental health issues.
Well, listen, we try to keep these down to 30 minutes. Thanks, Lynn and April. You guys did a great job, and keep up the good work. Keep up the good work. And our next session will do a kind of a wrap-up of all these different interesting ideas on the 11th of December. So between now and then, you all have a good Thanksgiving, and kind of stay warm.
Thank
okay.
you.
Okay.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank
have
you.
A good day.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.